Thank you. Be seated. The orders of the court are posted outside and in the clerk's office. This morning, two causes will be argued through the court. In the order of presentation, they are as follows. Melissa Laster versus First Huntsville Property Company from Walker County, and Bob Bullock versus House of Lloyd Incorporated from Travis County. In each of these causes, the court has allotted 15 minutes for the petitioner and respondent to present oral argument. The petitioner may save back a portion of that time to present rebuttal argument. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of these two arguments. The arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court, and anyone who desires to listen to tapes of these arguments may make application with the clerk of our court. We're pleased to note that two groups of students are in the courtroom this morning from Howard College and from Angelo State in San Angelo. Court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in Laster versus First Huntsville Properties.
May it please the court, I am John Wright from Huntsville, Texas, representing Melissa Laster in this cause. The main thrust of our application for writ of error has to do with the sequence of events in the case. This is a homestead case. We have a situation where the homestead had firmly attached to this house and lot in Huntsville, Texas, far earlier than the time that the respondent's interest came to it. The issue then is whether the homestead is paramount to the undivided interest, the right of partition and sale. Owned by the respondent. The only case that seems to be anywhere close is the case of Sayers versus Pyland, decided nearly 50 years ago. In Sayers versus Pyland, the situation was the reverse of this one, where the co-tenancy had come into being before one of the co-tenants had moved on to it in effect, and placed the homestead. Now, we do not attack the holding of Sayers versus Pyland. It is an extension of the Constitution. It is a court-made exception to this section of the Constitution, but it is a sensible one that we do not ask the court to change. The respondent, though, would extend that rule to the reverse situation where the homestead had firmly attached before the co-tenancy came into being. And we say that first in time is first in right as between these two.
The homestead interest has expired, has it not?
No.
Well, the divorce decree provided that it expired when the youngest child reached 18.
The divorce decree awarded her the exclusive right to occupy the home until the youngest child became 18. That is correct. But she had a pre-existing homestead right before that time.
But the divorce decree modified that.
It did modify it, but we say that it simply enhanced it. It gave her something that she hadn't had before, but it took away nothing in that respect.
So even her former husband could not enforce his undivided interest in the property?
If we were to take the assumption that he hadn't mortgaged it and there hadn't been the foreclosure and he were here instead of us, we would take the position that yes, that the homestead right would be superior to his right. And how did he get it?
So when the divorce decree awarded him 26.17%, he got nothing, basically.
No, he didn't get nothing. That interest will still belong to whoever owns it, subject to the homestead protection. Let me explain why we say this is so.
Let me be sure that I understand my question. If he wanted to sell that interest or move in with that interest or use that interest in any way, your position is that his wife's, former wife's, habitation of the home and her 73% interest prevents him from doing it.
Okay. If he wanted to sell his interest, he can do that. But let's be very clear about what the respondent is asking to be done here. He wants to sell our interest as well as his.
How's that?
Well, when he applies for an application for a writ of partition and sale, you sell the entirety.
He cannot ever obtain any right of possession or use of the 26.17% interest awarded him by the court, can he?
Not until the homestead, until she would alienate, abandon, or die, would be our position. And the reason for that is this.
So I'll be clear. When the divorce decree said that the homestead right lasted only until her children reached 18 years of age, that language just had no effect. It lasts forever.
Okay.
As long as she stays there.
I think we should take a very close look at the precise language of the divorce decree. I don't have it right here in front of me, right here at the podium. But
I have a copy in front of me, counsel. Go ahead.
Okay. I believe what she's given is an exclusive right of occupancy is the way I recall that language. And it doesn't talk about terminating the homestead in that precise language.
But it says that it is set aside and awarded to petitioner and the children until the youngest child reaches the age of 18 years or is no longer in school, whichever occurs first.
Okay.
And then it preconditions it upon her making the mortgage payments, upkeeping the premises, and it also says that if for any reason she should vacate the premises for 3 years, that her right to use and occupy terminates.
That's the way I recall the language in the decree.
Is that for the whole claim that she might have made to terminate if under the terms of the divorce decree?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand the question.
The provision that Judge Cook just read. And now, as I understand, you're claiming that she had an independent homestead right that had nothing to do with the divorce decree.
Well, the divorce decree awarded the use and occupancy of the residence to her exclusively until the youngest child became 18.
And you said that enhanced her homestead right.
Well, yes, because she already had a homestead protection when she came into the divorce action, and nowhere in there is it taken away from her.
Counsel, do you agree that under Section 3.63 of the Family Code that the Judge Bud Warren could have ordered the property sold even though she had a homestead right at the time of divorce?
Could have ordered the property sold at that point.
And divided the proceeds.
Could have done that.
Okay. But he didn't. What he did was allow her to use the property for the use and benefit of the children until the youngest child reached age 18.
That is accurate.
Now, if she would have moved out for a period of 3 years, that homestead right would have dissolved, would it not?
Probably by abandonment, even without regard to the decree.
But what the judge did was, in effect, extend the homestead right until the youngest child reached 18. Now, that's very common in family law, is it not?
It is. I wonder about the word extend the homestead right, because unless he took it away from her in some way, she would still have it.
When, under your theory, does her homestead right terminate?
Well, as I read the cases, it would terminate if she were to alienate it, abandon it, or when she dies. Counsel?
divorce decree awarded her a homestead interest in the property. Is that correct? I mean, it recognized any homestead interest she had. It made it literal in the decree. Is that correct?
It used the word homestead in the decree, and it was talking about this house, this residence, right. And governing.
There's no question that from the divorce decree forward, that home was affected with a homestead interest. Isn't that correct?
Not only from the time forward, but from prior to that time.
I'm concerned about the point from the decree forward. It was affected with a homestead interest.
Yes.
Texas Constitution specifically provides that you cannot encumber the title of a homestead other than for purchase money or improvements. Isn't that correct?
Subtle law.
It was affected with a homestead interest at the time the ex-husband took out the loan, wasn't it?
Yes, but it was not his homestead interest.
Doesn't make any difference.
I agree.
Counsel,
doesn't precedent determine that when someone takes out a loan, attempts to mortgage a homestead interest, that mortgage is a nullity?
There is some law to that effect. Be just as candid as I can with the court. There's a question whether it's an absolute nullity or whether it is simply null and void as to that person's interest.
What I'm saying is that the husband had no mortgageable interest, did he, in that homestead? Was it homestead or was it not homestead?
It could not have been his homestead, but it was protected from forced sale by her homestead.
Did he
interest.
Have a mortgageable interest in that homestead? Did he borrow the money to make improvements or to purchase it? Was it a second mortgage for acquisition of improvements or property?
No, they took this as extra collateral upon a renewal of a note. That's all that occurred with that.
It was a pre-existing loan?
Pre-existing, there was a prior loan to the loan that's concerned here. This is a renewal of it.
The question really is, can a third party literally come in and mortgage someone else's homestead interest so that it could be partitioned, they could be divested of it some future date?
I would like to say absolutely that I was sure that they could not. Our position before the court is if they can and if they do, we at least still have our homestead protection as long as we're there.
Any other questions?
I have one last question. Counsel, looking at the decree, it says, is set aside and awarded to petitioner until. So is not the court limiting the homestead exemption? Until, and then it lists a series of things. If she would not have made the mortgage payments, it would have terminated. If the youngest child had not reached age 18, isn't the court conditioning the length of her homestead exemption?
I think the court was conditioning the length of this exclusive right of occupancy that was awarded to her and added on to the homestead protection that she already had. That's the way I interpret that. The matter may be somewhat ambiguous. I think that the trial judge in this case had the right to construe that language to try to understand what he thought Bud Warren meant back then. And he construed it adversely to the lender here, and I don't see that as an abuse of his discretion.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from Ms. Chandler.
May it please the court, good morning. I appear before you on behalf of First Huntsville Properties Company, the respondent. I'd like first to respond to the question and comments made by Justice Gamage with respect to whether or not the husband had the power to mortgage the property when he did. First, the theory implicit in the justice's question is a theory that has not been pled by the petitioner. Secondly, we would say that Mr. Laster, when he executed the mortgage in behalf of the bank, was not mortgaging Mrs. Laster's interest in the property. He was mortgaging his own interest in the property. That was his property. He was not occupying the property at the time. There is no evidence in the record that he had any intent to ever occupy it in the future. Homestead requires intent to occupy coupled with incidents of actual use and possession, and therefore there would be, in my view, no factual basis to reach the conclusion that Mr. Laster, at the time he executed the mortgage on behalf of the bank, had a homestead interest in the undivided interest that had been awarded to him in the divorce decree.
That wasn't my question, counsel. What I was asking is whether he could encumber the property so long as it was affected with the homestead interest, even though he had an interest in the property. Can he encumber or conduct some transaction while that property is affected with a homestead interest? Can a third party who owns an interest in the property come in and divest someone else of their homestead? As you know, the trial court has the power to award a spouse a homestead interest in the other spouse's separate property.
That's correct.
And even though the other spouse may own that property for eternity, can't sell it, can't encumber it, can't mortgage it, can't do anything to divest the other spouse of that homestead interest.
I think he has the power to convey what he owns. What he owned was an undivided interest subject to a right of exclusive occupancy for a particular period. It's important to remember that the bank took no action realize the benefits of its ownership interest in the property by way of action for partition until the right of exclusive occupancy had terminated under the terms of the divorce decree. So I think that whatever he owned, he had the power to mortgage.
Counsel, I'm interested to know how you would characterize the impact of the divorce decree on the homestead rights of both parties.
The divorce decree, in my view, did not enhance Mrs. Laster's homestead interest. Mr. and Mrs. Laster acquired this property as community property. They both had homestead interests in the property. The divorce decree divided the fee ownership. Ms. Laster continued to have a homestead right in her undivided interest. I characterize the interest awarded to her under the divorce decree as essentially a tenancy in Mr. Laster's undivided interest. The court awarded to her the right of use and occupancy of his undivided interest. So she continued to have a homestead interest in her undivided interest, and she had a tenancy, a right of exclusive occupancy, in Mr. Laster's undivided interest.
But he lost all homestead rights in that property operation of the divorce decree?
He lost that by moving out of the house and abandoning any intent to occupy it as his residence, rather than by virtue of the divorce decree.
Which, I guess, happened before the divorce.
Yes, sir. I think the fundamental fallacy of the argument that has been asserted by the petitioner lies in this proposition that her homestead right had its inception prior to the co-tenancy. Mrs. Laster has never been the exclusive owner of this residence. She and her husband bought it. Their co-ownership originated when they purchased the home. And when you look at Sayers versus Pylon, the court said, when one attempts to fix homestead rights in property of which he is not the exclusive owner, he does so with notice that whatever homestead rights he may acquire are subordinate to all the rights and equities that his co-tenant may have. So that when couples purchase property as community property and establish it as their homestead, they take it, in my view, and according to, I think, the rationale of the holding in Sarah versus Pyland, they take it with notice that their rights, their homestead rights are subject to being divested by a divorce court upon termination of their marital relationship. And her, whatever homestead rights Mrs. Laster acquired in this property when it was bought and occupied by she and Mr. Laster and their children were subordinate to the overriding right that implicit in the family code in section 3.63 of the family code.
Counsel, isn't it true that the divorce decree does not speak at all in terms of extending her homestead rights?
That is certainly correct.
Let me see if I understand your argument. You're conceding that the mortgage, which you're not trying to foreclose against this property, was not purchase money and was not for improvement.
That is correct.
And you're saying that even though the Constitution says you cannot impress a mortgage on a homestead except for these purposes, that is of no moment here because the husband...
I'm saying that the Constitution...
Because the husband had an interest in this homestead or was not claiming the homestead.
What he had an undivided interest in the property, but he did not occupy it. Therefore, the husband had no homestead right. What we're saying is that...
But the property, whether he had a homestead right or not, the property, the fee, was suppressed for the homestead. Totally.
Not totally, Your Honor.
Are you saying the wife only had the right to possession, all of it, but not only had a homestead interest after her particular percentage?
What we're saying, exactly, that the homestead protection afforded by the Constitution and the statute extends only to what one owns, that you cannot use it to protect something that you do not own. And so what we're saying is like the old case, I don't have the citation immediately at hand, but the old case that said that one cannot, under a lease, obtain a homestead right in property that extends beyond the term of one's lease.
Counsel, if that's the case, then how could the trial court, the divorce court, have awarded her a homestead interest in the whole at all? Because he clearly awarded the husband a portion of the interest in the property. How could a divorce court award a spouse a homestead interest in the other spouse's separate property if the homestead interest can only affect what you own?
Well, it can award a homestead interest in a separate property. The question is then, suppose that separate property is the husband's homestead, can it divest him of the homestead right? And I think the
homestead, for so long as the spouse with the homestead interest continues to exercise that homestead interest or abandons it or dies, wouldn't her homestead interest be affected the same way?
We would say that Ms. Laster continues to have a homestead interest in her undivided interest. Even after the partition and sale, she's going to still have the same value that she has now. We would say that Mr. Laster abandoned this property as his homestead. He no longer continued to occupy it as his homestead. Therefore, he had no homestead claim or protection at the time he mortgaged it to the bank. We're simply saying that you cannot have a homestead right in what you do not own. That is our position. That
how can a trial court, how can a divorce court award someone a homestead interest in the other spouse's separate property if that's the case?
I think that power of the court, divorce court, in that case derives from the power of given it to it by Section 3.63 of the Family Code to divide the estate of the parties.
That's not a division of the estate. That's specifically awarding an interest, a homestead interest, in the other spouse's separate estate.
For a particular time. You have the
doctrine. For so long as she survives until she
passes. That's still different than awarding her the fee interest in the separate estate because the trial court in the divorce case would not have the power to divest him of his separate property.
What do you think the Constitution, the drafters, and the people intended when they put the homestead protection language in the Constitution? Texas, I don't know if any other states have as strong a provision as Texas does. It was there for a very specific reason, wasn't it?
It certainly was. It was to provide people some protection against their own excesses or their own lack of sound judgment in borrowing money or incurring debt.
But I don't think it was intended. How can he, in bad judgment, go encumber her interest? in her homestead.
Well, where we differ is I would say that he did not encumber her interest. He only encumbered his own interest.
Her homestead interest was not created by the trial court.
Correct.
It preexisted.
Correct.
The trial court reaffirmed it, said, and you have the right to exclusive occupancy until the youngest child reaches 18 or no longer goes to school, or you stop making mortgage payments, or you leave the place for 3 years.
But the trial court divested her of a portion of the underlying fee interest, and it awarded it to Mr. Laster. And the language in the decree is free from any claim of petitioner other than the right of exclusive occupancy for a limited period. So it may have afforded her some protection.
What you're saying is divorce decree said basically the loose language in the decree about homestead is irrelevant. You got the right to use this place exclusively until some of those other conditions are met. Then he can partition and sell it. Might as well have put an order in there that the property is to be sold and the proceeds divided along these lines.
What I'm saying is that the court, at the termination of the right of exclusive occupancy, Richard Laster would have had a right to partition. That right was given to him by the divorce decree. If he had that right, then the bank and its successor in interest now have that right because they gave value for it and they acquired the property. Now the question is...
But they did it during a period of time when it was affected with a homestead interest for sure.
Well,
counsel, if the shoe were on the other foot and Ms. Laster had borrowed some money secured by her interest in this property and you had not sought to sell it to repay that debt until after she had abandoned it, how would you treat your client's interest in the property under those circumstances? Did her homestead interest render that void or protect it before sale?
I don't think so. We have...
So you're saying she had a homestead right which would render the render that protected from forced sale, but...
By her own acts. By her own acts.
Even after she abandoned it.
No, not after she abandoned it. After she abandoned it, if she abandoned her homestead right, it would be subject to her alienation for debt purposes other than for purchase money or for improvements.
Would your client's interest be void?
At what point in time, Your Honor?
At the time it supposedly attached, while she still occupied it.
No, sir. Would not be void.
Would not be void. Why not?
No, we don't derive our title from her. We derive our title from Mr. Laster.
I'm in my hypothetical. Well, if she borrowed money from your client during the time she occupied it, and you supposedly got a secured interest in her ownership of the house, but you did not seek to foreclose on it until after she abandoned the property, what would be the nature of...
Even though it was within the limitation period or something? I never have looked at that question. I don't know the answer to that question. If you mortgage property, is it absolutely void, or is it just, does it postpone your right as long as it's occupied as a homestead? I frankly don't know the answer to that question.
Why is it not void? Because the Constitution said the only recognizable way that you can put, legally recognizable way you can impress a lien on a homestead is purchase money or improvement.
Or tax.
Or taxes. Right. And if it's none of the three, therefore it's void.
It may very well be the case. But the fact remains that the mortgage that we derive our title under...
I understand, but that's not the question that's being asked.
I think the fundamental issue in this case is not really a homestead issue. It's an issue of what rights did Richard Laster acquire under the divorce decree. And I would assert that whatever rights Richard Laster owned under the divorce decree are now owned by regular chain of conveyance by my client.
Counsel, are you familiar with Toler against Petita?
No, sir, I'm not.
So, Texas Commission of Appeals, case 1934, was adopted by this court. It says basically that any attempted mortgage of a homestead other than those provided for in the state constitution is void and never becomes effective to any extent. If she couldn't mortgage her interest, how could he mortgage the property that was affected by her interest?
Well, it would sort of be like a situation in which someone is occupying property as a tenant. They, under a tenancy, you have a right of homestead.
She wasn't occupying it as a tenant. She was occupying it with a homestead interest. And if she abandoned it, if she was a co-tenant, she could walk away for 10 years, and she would still have her co-tenancy rights. But as a homestead holder, she could abandon that homestead interest. And the court specifically said, if you abandon that homestead interest, all you are is a co-tenant. He can partition and sell. That's basically what the trial court was saying. But you got a homestead interest. He can't mess with you.
Well,
and it was affected with that interest at the time this mortgage was assigned, wasn't it?
What I'm saying is that her tenancy existed in Mr. Laster's undivided interest. Her right of occupancy as to Mr. Laster's interest was derived under the divorce decree. And I'm saying that she could not mortgage Mr. Laster's interest, his undivided interest. All she could mortgage is what she owned.
This decree purported to divest her of her homestead interest?
Yes, sir. As to her undivided...
What's the specific language?
The language that divests her of her homestead interest and of title is the language that says, this property, this undivided 20-some-odd interest, undivided interest, is awarded to Mr. Laster free of any claim of petitioner other than, and I know that it uses the word other than, but then it goes on and it qualifies what is awarded to Mr. Laster. It says that what is awarded to you is subject to a right of exclusive occupancy. But the broad general language is that Mrs. Laster is divested of all rights other than those that are specifically awarded to her by the terms of the divorce decree.
But it specifically awards her a homestead interest in that property.
I concede that it
awards her a homestead interest in that property at least until those conditions are met, until she abandons it to take the mortgage, or the youngest child leaves home or stops going to school?
It awards her with a right of exclusive occupancy as to his undivided interest.
Counsel, it never talks at all about awarding her a homestead interest. So that I can find, it says she is awarded the use and occupancy.
Correct, Your
Honor. Of the homestead, because at that time it was a homestead.
It was her homestead, not and Mr. Laster's homestead.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Counsel, is the homestead language in the divorce decree just loose language? Is it excess verbiage?
It's not just loose language, but it's not as tight as I would like to see. I was not involved in this case at that early point. It doesn't seem to always draw the distinction between the homestead interest in the residence and the residence itself. Leaving it possible for the trial judge in this case to construe the intent, which I think he did, and I think he did it right. I had one other comment I wanted to make, and that is this. We have a situation where Mr. Laster, after the time of the divorce decree, was not and could not be a co-tenant after that time. That's obvious, because what he was deprived of in that decree, which was an agreed decree, was his right to possession. And that is what you must have in order to successfully sue for a writ of partition and sale. You must have the present right of possession. So that present right of possession didn't come back to him until the youngest child became 18. That's why we say we're on first, because we never abandoned. We didn't alienate. We're not dead.
Counsel, so what would happen to the former wife if she allowed the premises to fall into a state of disrepair under the decree, would she have lost her right to exclusive use and possession?
Under the decree, yes.
Okay. Now, if she would have lost her right to exclusive use and possession, if she allowed the premises to fall into a state of disrepair, why does she not also lose the right to exclusive use and possession when the youngest child reaches age 18?
Because the divorce decree doesn't say that. It's not explicit about it. It doesn't really, if you really read that thing closely, it really doesn't tell us what the situation is to be after the youngest child becomes 18. You read many decrees where they'll say, and at that point, that the party, either one of them, can then have a writ of partition and sale. That language, any kind of remedy or whatever, is completely gone. It's not in this decree.
Counsel, it says, is set aside and awarded to petitioner until the youngest child reaches 18. That until qualifies her exclusive right of use and possession, does it not?
It does. It does qualify it, but it really doesn't say, okay, now what's to happen now?
What's the power of the trial court on divorce to give her exclusive possession after the child reaches majority? Does the trial court have that power?
I think that the trial court could, probably has that power, probably, but our position is it wasn't necessary. She had the homestead protection secured by the Texas Constitution, and she didn't alienate it. She didn't abandon it. She's not dead, so she still has it.
At least her rights were modified by the divorce decree, were they not? Her homestead or her rights?
The underlying title was changed, but the fact that the underlying title changes doesn't change your homestead right as long as you're still using it and occupying it as such. There is a case that I hadn't put in any of my briefing before, and it's I think maybe a little bit helpful, not exactly on point, but I think helpful. It's W.R. Thompson and Sons versus Clifton, 124 Southwest 2nd 106. It, too, is a Texas Commission of Appeals Court decision, 1939, that this court adopted. It's important in this case because it underscores the importance of the inception in time, of us being on first. Why is that so important? In that case, a son moved on to his father's property and used it as a homestead. He had his father's consent. He was a tenant at will. The son suffered a money judgment, which was abstracted in the county where the land was situated. Then when the father dies, he inherits it. Then the judgment creditor comes in later, even after his death, and goes after his heirs, but that doesn't matter. But judgment lien was attached to the property before he ever inherited it. And this court held, and I think properly, was no, judgment creditor, you're not on first. And the reason you're not on first is that even though your lien was abstracted before the father died, which is how we got the property, son was there using it as his homestead way before your judgment lien.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first call. The court will now take a brief recess.